This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. Thanks so much for listening. Did you hear about the cool new car everybody else was talking about in the last week? No, it wasn't a Porsche or a Ferrari or a Lamborghini, and it wasn't made by Ford or GM or Chrysler. It was made by that renowned car company, Google. Yeah, Google introduced a car last week. A car that's not available on the mass market yet, but a car that's different from any other car because this one drives itself. In fact, it doesn't even have a steering wheel or brakes or anything else for you to use inside except an emergency off switch if its sensors and computers are for some reason not doing their job. This is technology that Google has been working on for 5 years. It will eventually come to market in some form, whether it's from Google or a more traditional car company. But the question is, why would Google even be doing this? Here to talk about that and the concept of the robot car to begin with is Rick Newman, columnist for Yahoo Finance and author of Rebounders, How Winners Pivot from Setback to Success. Rick, welcome back to America Weekend.
Hey, Paul.
Would you get in the Google self-driving car?
Yeah, I would get in it. I think there's a lot of evidence that all this automation under the right circumstances does probably make cars safer now. And if this ever works out the way the technologists want it to, and I'm not taking that as a given, but if it does work out that way, it will make driving safer. And you know, one interesting thing here, Paul, is we're actually already seeing some of this technology showing up in cars, not the ones made by Google, which nobody can buy, but the ones made by every other automaker. And they're starting to show up as small features in mostly in luxury cars, because that's the way this usually works. Expensive new technology usually starts at the top of the automotive food chain and works its way down. But when we see things like so-called smart cruise control that can slow up or speed down based on the distance of the car in front of you, and lane departure warning systems that tell you if it's okay to move into the lane because sensors can tell if there's a car there. There are some cars that have cameras all the way around, a 360-degree view to sense anything around the car. This is the beginning of the driverless car, and it's already starting to make its way into the fleet.
And Ford already has a couple of models that can do parallel parking.
Yeah, you know, it's, all the automakers have different forms of this technology in there. Some are promoting it really heavily, and some are keeping wraps on it because they've got their own plans. But this is all in the supplier base. There are suppliers that sell this technology to all the car makers. So you have to scratch your head and say, well, what does Google think they can offer that, you know, these long-established car companies cannot necessarily offer? And it's not cars. It's software for cars. And my bet is that's what Google's after here.
I agree. As they move forward, they want to get a piece of that after, as much as they don't make phones, but they provide the Android system for more phones than there are Apple phones in the world.
Yeah, I think that's the exactly right analogy. So I think it's extremely unlikely that Google is ever going to build an assembly line where they're forming sheet metal into automobiles. Google doesn't want to be in that business. It's actually a terrible business compared to what Google does. Google's highly profitable, way more profitable than any automaker. But what's happening with cars is there's a huge battle underway to control the software that's in the car. And before long, when we buy a new car, we may end up having to decide at the dealer, do I want an Android car or an Apple car? Both of them are just the same, exactly the same as when we buy a phone. And I think what Google's trying to do is, and Apple's trying to do the same thing, by the way, is get the strongest foothold it can get so that when you buy a car, it's going to be on Google's operating system, if you will. And that might involve these automation features, but it's also going to involve the entertainment and the apps that you have in your car. I mean, people in this business like to point out that the ultimate mobile device is not a phone, it's a car. And what we're already seeing is the merging of these two devices, one small and fits in your pocket, and one's huge, and it fits in your driveway.
We will have truly connected cars at that point.
That's where we're headed.
Now, I've told people about this, and like you, I would have no trouble getting into the self-driving car, even though I really like driving. But if I'm going 15 or 20 minutes to work or somewhere around my neighborhood, okay, I can take care of that. That's fine. But if I'm going to go 3, 4, 5 hours, or I know people, including members of the staff of this show, who have done 10-hour drives or more, it would be nice to be able to get in there and not have to worry about the hassles of driving those distances, maybe be able to take a nap along the way, watch a movie, the same thing you could do if you were on a train or in a plane.
That's the promise of automated cars. And think about commuting, for instance. Even people who like to drive don't necessarily like to commute, especially if you're stuck in traffic. So that's, I think commuting in sort of slow-moving traffic is probably the first place we're likely to see this automation rolling out, because that's actually an environment in which automated cars ought to be pretty good, because it will actually be relatively easy to sense all the cars around you, especially if they're going at fairly low speeds. There are a lot of difficulties here, Paul, and, you know, technologists have a way of living in these fantasy worlds and saying, see, if we just limit the technology, it's going to be on its way. It'll be here before you know it. There are two problems with that, I think. One is lawyers. There are sure to be very, very thorny legal issues, because there will be accidents. And if there's an accident in an automated car, whose fault is it? You know, in a lot of instances where you say, well, it has to be the driver's fault, okay, that's easy to understand. Well, if it's not the driver's fault, is it Google's fault? Is it GM's fault? Is it the other company's fault? That's a real thorny problem. And the other is, I would not automatically assume there will be widespread acceptance of this. And I think there, you know, when there are a few accidents, there will be a lot of publicity surrounding those. It will make it sound more dangerous than it is, and that's going to be a public perception issue to get over. So those are two big roadblocks. I hope we get over them, because this is looking like terrific technology, but I'm not sure it's going to happen as fast as some people want it to.
I agree with you that there's going to be a consumer obstacle there. From the people that I've talked to, at least half of them said, I'm not going to trust a computer to drive a car. What happens if something happens to the computer? I can't tell you how many times my computer at home is locked up and I've had to reboot it. And I said to them, do you trust the humans that are driving cars now? Because you can go to any city in America, Rick, and the people there will tell you, oh, people around here do not know how to drive.
Except for me. Everybody's a bad driver except for me, right? That seems to be what everybody thinks.
That's right. But
they're wrong. They're wrong. Everybody's a bad driver, including you and including me. But reality and perception are two very different things. There's a big gap between the two. And even though you can basically prove to people with data that it would be better if you gave up control, if everybody gave up some control, because computers can do these things better, it's just difficult to believe. It's kind of like being on an airplane. When something is a little off on an airplane, people feel very uncomfortable because they have no control.
Yeah.
Even though the pilot is highly trained and he's a professional and the software is even better than the pilot, it still makes people uncomfortable. That lack of control is an off-putting thing.
What they don't realize is that for three quarters of that trip, a computer was flying the plane. It was on autopilot. I'm curious what this means to professional drivers, though. You know, we're hearing a lot about Uber and Lyft and Sidecar, these new cab services. I could see a time not too distant in the future when you don't need any cab service with a human driver. You just use your app to tell the car to come pick you up. It pulls up in front of your apartment or your house. You tell it where to go with the app, and you go. You don't need a human in there.
Again, it's quite intriguing in theory. Now, I spent a lot of time in New York City, and there are so many unpredictable obstacles in a place like that, and in most cities, really. For example, one of the big barriers is if a construction crew happens to pop out into the road on a given day. Maybe they're fixing a pothole, maybe they're fixing an overhead power line, and you have to go around them into the other lane. Computers have a hard time figuring that out, believe it or not. That is something the human brain actually can handle really easily. That's one thing a computer cannot do very well, because you're not supposed to go in the oncoming lane. And when I walk around New York City and I think about this, I see barriers like that, several on every block, and I just wonder, man, the person who can invent the software that will figure this out is going to be a genius and perhaps the world's first trillionaire. So this is why Google is doing this under very controlled circumstances on certain roads, mostly in California. And it is quite a leap from there into some of the world's tougher driving environments.
Going to be interesting to see how they do this moving forward, and it's been interesting this year to follow their progress with the foam-fronted self-driving car. Rick Newman, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for being with me, Paul. See ya.
Rick Newman, finance columnist for Yahoo Finance. Latest book was called Rebounders, How Winners Pivot from Setback to success. I'm Paul Harris. This is America Weekend.